Blog Talk Radio.
This is Through the Eyes of the Black Woman with your host, Salida.
I missed last night. I had some other stuff I had to do. So I wound up missing last night. I really wanted to continue with this book, but like I said, I had other engagements. I'm hoping you guys are having a great week. I know one thing. It is cold, and I myself got sick, you guys. I co-host a radio show in the morning time on our local radio station, and one of our local radio stations. And I had to call in because I couldn't do it. So I'm going to try to do a good show tonight for you guys. Really, I am. As you can see, let's see. I hope everyone is staying warm and out of the cold. If you have to go to work, go to work. If you're not home, I learned my lesson a long time ago. In an ice storm when I was living in, I had a habit of being so dedicated to the job that it was an ice storm, and they told us if we didn't have to go to work, don't be out. I was going to try to go. And I wound up having a car accident because I needed to be at work. But anyway, I pray that doesn't happen to any of you guys. So we're going to go ahead and get back into sexual abuse of power in the Black church. And I know we missed on Sundays. We're not here. Monday, I missed last night. So I want to continue the conversation about sexual abuse of power in the Black church. And we learned how important it is to know who we have basically over our. We talked about the story about the 44-year-old woman who has four kids and how she was sexually abused, not only by her stepfather, her mom didn't believe her, sent her to the pastor, and the pastor wound up sexually abusing her too. We talked about not knowing who we're hiring and are these people mentally prepared to be able to handle counseling and talk to people about their problems, look at. We talk about boundaries. We're in the process of talking about boundaries and not knowing, you know, what our boundaries are. We've talked about the priest in the Catholic Church and how we're confusing homosexuality with abuse because we're not seeing it as we're so focused on the homosexuality or the homophobia that we have that we're not the misuse of power in the church when it comes to our priests, clergymen, pastors, preachers, what call it. But that's what's happening, and because we're not educated, we focus on the wrong. And really, to be honest with you, when we've seen this happen, you think about Eddie Long, you think priests in the churches, they should have gotten help. And we have to understand, not necessarily is it about sex either. Rape is not about sex. It's about power. And if it beyond that, we could get the help that is needed for the people who need the help. And it's not only the victim, it's also the person who's the perpetrator. Okay, let's see. Let's talk about. I want to make sure we're in the right side. I think we stopped at the discourse of sexual abuse. It says right here, it says, the ideal that pastors should expect to have sexual relationships with their parishioners are common among Black clergy and church persons. They have convinced themselves that it is natural for a clergy, in most cases male clergy, to violate appropriate sexual boundaries. This folk perspective is thought to be an alternative to more puritanical white views of sexuality. In fact, these ideals are not derived from that. They are, in fact, the recap of the lack of sexual Black joy. The sexual of Black women, men, and children in which masters exploited the Black benefit pleasure, destroyed family bounds and boundaries that regulated appropriate, loving, intimate, and proper sexual activity. It says, African-American male slaves were forced to have sexual intercourse with their female community members in order to produce more slave children for commerce and labor on the plantation. This means that Black males as well as females suffered the destructive effects of sexual abuse of power. Slave narratives are consistent on this issue as they relate how Black males felt violated by the system of slavery, which required that they sexually violate their Black female community members. Excuse me. What lingering effects that may have had on the Black male psyche is open to conjecture, but it may have contributed to the present prevalence of sexual abuse of power by male clergy. And then I was reading in the wrong spot. We were talking about transference. I'm sorry. I don't know what I was thinking. Transference. Okay, it says Black folk culture and ethics. Most professional codes of ethics are built on an acceptance of need for healthy emotional boundaries between the helping professionals and their clients. This is true of doctors, nurses, lawyers, teachers, etc. But the Black church and clergy have developed a folk understanding of sexuality, which has relieved them of the responsibility of maintaining appropriate boundaries. It has become too easy to explain abuse of power as simply as a result of sexual attraction, community expectations, or dubious biblical interpretation. Most codes of ethics state that there should be a prohibition against sexual contact between the professional and the client. This is important for several reasons. The first reason is because there is a tendency for the person being helped to develop feelings of dependency or attachment, transference, to the professional who is in the position of power. These are often sexualized feelings in which the client believes that he or she is in love with the helper, and they may project their feelings so that they may believe that this love also exists in the helper toward them. These feelings create an ideal that they are special and are at the leader's favor, and they are the leader's. And you know this happens commonly, all the time, in a lot of situations. It's not necessarily in the church with pastor and the parishioner. It can also happen in school. It can happen at work that we get this way. It can happen with a psychologist and its patient, a psychiatrist and its patient, social worker and her patient. You know, you never know. Okay. It says right here, if the leader is not careful about maintaining appropriate boundaries, the desire for closeness makes the parishioner particularly vulnerable to manipulation and exploitation by the helper who is in big power of the relationship. Okay, so when you're in that power position, it's a position also of control. You can have control over somebody by the things that you say, the situation that you put them in, how you make them feel. That's why they say the person is vulnerable. You know, say there's a husband and wife. The husband is not giving the attention that the wife is asking. She goes to her pastor, get counseling, you know, and the things that she would want her husband to say to her or do or understand about her, the pastor does. And before you know it, he's already overstepped his boundaries. by even coming off to her like that. Even if he didn't mean to, he has to notice the difference. It says this effect, first described by Sigmund Freud, is called transference, yes, because the client, or in this case, the parishioner, transfers a projects their misplaced feelings of love, affection, and sometimes anger or other emotions unto the helper. This is not in and of itself a bad thing. Freud and other deaf psychologists believed that there was no healing without transference, because it was through transference that the patient revealed their deepest feelings. These feelings could then be used for healing as long as the healer maintained an appropriate emotional, sexual, and physical distance from the client and did not give in to these projections of love and closeness. So I'm thinking like this: you have to be in a position of knowing that you're stronger than the way you would normally feel towards somebody as the person who's in control. Some people are not cut out to be in these positions, and this tells you right here. Now, Sigmund Freud said that transference has to happen in order for the healing, but that's not necessarily true. Okay, it says counter-transference is when the helper also projects their feelings onto the client and acts in such a manner that violates the boundary between the client and the patient. And that's what I basically just said. He has to be able to control him or herself. This is often sexual, but it can also take a form of other issues that may be alive in the unconscious of the helper, such as treating the parishioner like a spouse, girlfriend, son, daughter, or friend. The helper is convinced that the client needs his involvement as a sign that the pastor cares for them and that the parishioner is worthy of the love. So that's why it's very important that you understand. When a person comes to you in a church, and I'm talking to you, Churchill, a person comes to you, they're coming to you broken, first and foremost. They're broken, they're vulnerable, they're on edge, they're stressed, they're looking for help, they're looking for an answer. I'm not talking about help, physical help, they're looking for an answer spiritually, because we know everything comes from the inside. So if they're looking for that help and they come to you, that's all you need to really to endeavor to them or give them is the spiritual help. All that other stuff is really not even necessary to even discuss or talk about. Now, it says this is a sign of independent behavior and makes the leader feel special and important. Do you see how it counters transfers? When now you're making the leader feel better about himself, that he's a light from you, you will allow the play into the hands of him. It says pastors who violate these boundaries may often suffer from a narcissistic psychological attitude. Wow. He said, I've seen many ministers' ego inflate as they find themselves the center of their parishioners' attention. I've seen it too. Oh, my God. A classic symptom of narcissism and counter-transference is when the pastor develops the ideal that only the pastor can help the person in need. This is an important sign to the pastor or a helper that he or she is in over her head in a particular situation. Nobody can help them. Just bring them to the pastor. The pastor can do it. Let the pastor talk to them. So you've already got the pastor with his head way over here. That's why I have issues. I have issues with people putting their pastors on pedestals. I have issues with that because they're like everybody else. Excuse me. I'm sorry. I'm not just saying that, but they are. They're just like everybody else. They can fall or, they can rise. Either way it goes, but they're like everybody else. And we put them out there on a pedestal like that, and you just boost up that ego for them to think that that narcissism kicks in and nothing can touch them. It says, excuse me, as I stated before, I have found that a lack of effective boundaries to be the predominant manifestation of abuse of power in most cases that I have witnessed or discussed. The pastor and layperson are convinced that there is a real and true attraction that exists between them. I have heard pastors rationalize the state of affairs in many ways that often combine black folk belief and psychological issues of dependency and transference. Pastors often use these encounters to boost feelings of self-esteem or importance, but I have yet to see a case in which someone wasn't hurt in this encounter. All right. We're going to come back and discuss that. We're going to take a break. This Yacht Woman with your host, Salute.
I'm in almost every school bus and classroom. I go to school with your children. We say the Pledge of Allegiance together. You see me around the neighborhood, and you've told me I'm a pretty good kid. Well, I'm one out of every four children in America, and I'm struggling with hunger. My teacher tells me, in this country, we could grow up and be whatever we want. I want to grow up and be someone who doesn't go to bed hungry. Please visit feedingamerica.org today and find your local food bank for ways to help. Every dollar you donate helps provide 7 meals for kids like me, quietly struggling with hunger. Together, we're Feeding America. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
To help fight hunger in central Louisiana and to find your local food bank, visit feedingamerica.org. That's feedingamerica.org.
Hi, I'm Salita, the owner of Say Your Peace Radio Network. We would like to invite you to join our team. By becoming a host, for more information, check out our website at sensible64.wix.com/ Say Your Peace Network. That's Say Your P-I-E-C-E Network.
I done wrote a whole book into it, spritzed all my doing fine. But I don't want to repent again for how much I had to grind. Interceding for my life to your Father. Clean your blood over my case. Showing your amazing grace when others would rather. And now I'm better. I got more courage and strength to write this letter. Got some questions I need to ask before I forget. Who's my guardian angel? So what's their names? I want to thank on purpose for not letting the bullets bust my brain. Miss you hate, that's me. Remember Father gave me that name. You told me the world hated you and they would do me the same. And I feel it, it's pumping through my veins. Thank you for my spiritual parents, they really trying to hang. The devil tried to heal them, but we claim the healing in your name. Agape love sinner, we been spiritually changed. My kids tell me to tell you how every day when we pray. And even little Kayla holds her hands when it's time to say grace. Your promise is overwhelming, just look at my wife. She loves your Father more than she does her life. And I love her for that. As a matter of fact, she's writing a song to worship you on a sea shark track. And thanks again for saving Bush, baby. Prodigal Soldiers Ministry, this is our season, baby. Gotta go, I love you and I'm glad you saved me. I'm getting my letter here, gotta go now. Born to take
a little different in the sense I'm admitting that I need deliverance from this backslidden position. Lord, I'm repenting. As a Christian, I used to pray every day. Now I don't know if you'll listen to what I have to say, but anyway, my prayer today is that you'll answer this letter. Lord, I've been missing you and wishing us two can get back together. Living in sin is like my pastor say, it takes you further than you want to go, keeps you longer than you want to stay, costs you more than you want to pay. I chose to find that out the hard way. Instead, I should have listened to the lost my time to fellowship. Now I'm wishing you respond to this letter as it's written. Truly unto you, I rededicate my life for new. Just tell me what it is that I need to do. Renew my mind so the world can't deceive. I promise to make you proud if you only receive. Being yoke is easy and your burden is light. Can I exchange mine for yours and give them all to Christ? Lord, please take my life again. And with your pen, write an epistle to be read among men. Pray to hear from you soon. P.S. My closest friend.
My love led to Jesus. Father God, this is one of your believers. Lord, I thank you for your mercy and grace. That's why I give you praise, love in this place.
We will return with Through the Eyes of the Black Woman with your host, Salida.
I want to tell the story of our existence in our own world. I want others to know that we all have a story to tell about who we are and what we are about. We as women play a very important role in life. God has allowed us to bear the brunt and bruises of so much pain throughout the world because he knew that we could survive through wars and injustices that have been geared toward us. He truly knew what he was doing when he created us. That is why they say we are the better half of the man. We as women need to take our place and stand tall, not wavering on who we are. We need not allow others to define us. We need to come together and stop putting each other down, making one another feel that they have to compete. Compete for attention, for relevance, and for substance. We have to know that we are somebody, that we are strong, resilient, intelligent, and most of all, survivors. Again, I say stand tall. Take your place in what defines you. Never let a tear be wiped away before it has a reason to be shed. Make every part of who you are represent what you stand for. You are relevant, no matter how others perceive you. You are relevant.
All right. We are back with Through the Eyes of a Black Woman with your host, Salita, and we're seeing the book Sexual Abuse of Power in the Black Church by H. Matthews, PhD. All right, back and repeat something we were talking about, or I read prior to us going to break. I said, as I stated before, I have found that the lack of effective bounty, the predominant manifestation of abuse of power in most of the cases that I have witnessed or discussed. The pastor and layperson are convinced that there is a real and true attraction that exists between them. I have heard pastors rationalize this state of affairs in many ways that often combine black folks' beliefs and psychological issues of dependency transference. Pastors are using counters to be more, but I see a case hurt in this encounter. So we have to understand that the pastors, some pastors, are not equipped to be pastors when it comes to the part of counseling and talking with the parishioner when it comes to their problems and situations. Okay, it says, pastor as helping professional. Okay, it says, persons not only tend to put their trust in their pastor as a loving and trusted father figure, they often come for help from the pastor when they're in emotional need and vulnerability. And we talked about that earlier. This has been especially true of black persons due to the poignancy of trained counselors and other helping professionals. When I have asked black church members if they would accept this kind of sexual misconduct from a doctor, social worker, police, or counselor who deals with persons in a state of crisis, they are better able to see why it is important for the pastor to also establish clear boundaries. So he uses, okay, if you were with your doctor said certain things or did certain, would you report them? And I think that's a great way of getting people to understand that it's not right for the pastor to do these things, because you have to look at them in that same light. As for pastor helping to do otherwise, then one might exploiting the experience, the emotional. Remember, we catch people at the time that they are very vulnerable, and we do these things. It says, pastor's role as father figure, projection of husband and lover, that was we're looking at. Okay. In order to continue to discuss this issue as it relates to the black pastor, it is first necessary to understand the unique role that the black pastor plays in the black community. The pastor has been more than just a religious leader. The pastor has also been seen as a kind of father that guides the church. The historical and contemporary destruction of the black family by slavery and historical discrimination has led to the pastor becoming an ever-increasing paternal figure in the church and community. And that's very well understood. They had to look up to your pastor. You had to go to your pastor simply because that's who you were supposed to, you know, when the destruction of us, when it came to slavery, when it came to the discrimination against us, the pastor was the person that you went to, you know, to feel complete or feel like you were somebody for some reason. It says black mothers have especially, looked to pastor as a role model and substitute for father-daddy role model for their children. Boys and girls who may not have a positive male role model are shown the pastor as the father figure that has been missing in their lives. This is one reason that makes abuse and power such a devastating action. So we as single mothers, you know what? I'm having this, for example, you have a son that you're having problems with. You know that's not in the picture. So the next thing you do is you wind up taking him to the pastor. And, pastor, you need to talk to him. Tell him what he's doing wrong and da-da-da-da. So you already started a pattern, or you set up this scenario for things to get out of hand. Excuse me. Okay. Let's see. This is one reason that makes abuse of power such a devastating action. Along with the projection of father also comes the projection wish of husband and lover. You know we do it. Often women have access to play these roles as well. It is not uncommon for black female parishioners to expect their pastor to fill their intimate, emotional, and sexual needs. For some reason, we get it mixed up in our heads. You know, I wish you were more like the pastor. When we really don't know what the pastor is doing at the house. We really don't. We assume he's doing the right thing. You know, he portrays it in the pulpit. You know, I do this for my, because I noticed what I noticed a lot about pastors, in my opinion. They start to brag about what they do for their husbands, for their wives, not trying to even put out the interpretation that, you know, that I would do this for you. But we in our mindset, because of the way we're thinking and all the stuff that we're going through, man, I wish that was my husband. Ooh, he takes care of her. And then she gets up and she basically follows up what he says. I have a good husband. I don't care what nobody says. My husband does for me. I don't care what any woman say about a man, but my man doesn't. So we actually continue to put the fuel to the fire to make these women think this way. I mean, this just women who are very vulnerable do this, okay? I'm just saying it like it is. That's just how it is. They do this. Excuse me, you guys. Okay. Let's see. Okay, it says, I have often heard black female minimize the sexual misconduct of the pastor by claiming that he is just a man. Oh, my God. Do we know? We are so familiar with that saying. A man gonna be a man. Or that men with power have always cheated. Okay.
Yeah.
I have heard many such justifications, but when these persons come to understand that they would never tolerate it as a fight with his children, or that husbands should have free reign to engage in as many sexual encounters as possible, then they see why a pastoral abuse of power can have such negative consequences. So you have to get them to understand and see it in a different light. Once they see it in a different light, then they realize that, you know what, my pastor is not supposed to approach me like this. My pastor is not supposed to touch me. My pastor is not supposed to say these things to me. If we just put it in the mindset of saying to them, would you let your doctor do this? You look at your doctor, would you let your doctor touch you? Would you let your doctor sweet talk you out your clothes? Make it the norm for a pastor to treat us like that, but we would never let our doctor, our teachers, or anybody else treat us like that. It says helping professionals know that it is common for their patients or clients to develop feelings of judgment. Excuse me, just one second. It says, helping professionals know that it is common for their patients or clients to develop feelings of love and attachment, but it is their responsibility to help the person develop ways to manage their lives that are not based on an emotional dependence with the person who is giving them care. A failure to do so robs the person in crisis from developing emotional skills to deal with their issues, and it thereby prolongs or prevents the road to healing. In the next chapter, they will continue to explore the patterns of abuse. Okay, we're already in chapter 2. Okay. Okay. All right, this is kind of a touchy subject. Okay, please. I didn't even introduce the term. I'm sorry, you guys. This cold is killing me. Not killing me physically, but it's irritating me. I'm getting ready to hit a really deep subject here in a second here. But I want to say if you have any questions, you can call in at 347-677-79. That's 347-677-1749. If you have any questions or comments, I am here, okay? I didn't do that in the introduction. I should have. I didn't get a chance to do it because I was yapping. Okay. Now, African-American sexual ethics. This chapter will continue to discuss the many ways that boundary issues surface in the lives of the black community and black churches. They occur in such terrific variations that the common issue of poor boundaries is not always acknowledged or understood. All right, let's talk about this. Oh, my God. I wonder if you guys are prepared. Let's talk about the down-low minister. Okay. Raise your hand if you know what down-low means or your interpretation of down-low. Anybody? Okay. I'm going to say what I think the down-low means to me before I can start reading this. Down-low means a person who, a male who's having sex with another male or a female having sex with another female and their wife doesn't know anything about it. Okay. That's my interpretation. See if I'm correct. It says the down-low minister. The down-low phenomenon is the hiding of same-sex sexual preferences by black males from their families and communities in order to avoid the likelihood of social rejection and oppression. Excuse me. I should have turned off my phone because it will make a lot of noise, you guys. I'm sorry. Let me do that real quick. In just one second. One more. I'm sorry. I apologize for that moment of silence. Okay, now, I just explained to you the down-low phenomenon. Let me say this again. It says it's actually talking about the male. It's not talking about the female. It's talking about the male. It says the down-low phenomenon is the hiding of the same-sex sexual preferences by black males from their families and communities in order to avoid the likelihood of social rejection and oppression. Wow. I found the down-low black minister to be pervasive in the community, regardless of region. When I taught a class of human sexuality in the black community in a Midwestern city, one of my students related how her husband had been a minister and a pillar of one of the local congregations. She was having difficulty in her marriage and discovered that her husband was cheating on her with other women in the church. She informed him that she knew that he had the failings of most men and that she was willing to remain in the marriage, but that it was important that he protect himself and not to endanger her life by bringing home STDs or HIV/AIDS. However, one day she returned home early than expected and found him in bed with a male lover. He had not informed her that he was bisexual. She ordered him and his lover out of her house before their children came home and announced to him that their marriage was over. She was not only disappointed with his lack of respect and discretion, but by having his lover come to their house, their family home, the fact that he was a minister who preached against homosexuality and that he was exposing her to the possible HIV due to his failure to use protection during his sexual activities was a breach of trust that she could not accept. His hypocrisy and deception, put it, had taken away my choice. So, how about that? She came home, she's thinking that, he's just basically, a womanizer in the church. But because he's over the congregation, he had a shoe he had to fill and he wasn't doing it. She was dealing with him on the purpose of, okay, baby, I know you're doing this. Let me deal with you. Let me do it the way I want you to be protected. And she comes and finds out that, hey, wait a minute, hold up. He's not just doing women, he's doing men too. It says she immediately sued for divorce. He begged her to forgive him and complained to his fellow ministers that his wife was divorcing him for no good reason. Okay. his ministerial colleagues, their wives and congregation began to pressure her to reconsider, but she was resolute in not discussing what she felt was a private matter between her and her husband. When she refused to change her position, he accused her of infidelity, and at the divorce hearing, he recruited his fellow ministers to attend the hearing to support him and attest to his good character. Wow. Let it go. I mean, come on, let it go. You did wrong, but now you're accusing her? Wow. What he didn't know was that his sexual encounter with his lover had been inadvertently recorded. Man, she had been trying to learn how to use new video camera she had brought and had mistakenly left it on before she left for work. When her husband's lawyer began to cross-examine her about the reason for the divorce, her lawyer produced a tape from the judge and court. When the tape began playing, she said she had never seen so many ministers move so swiftly in leaving a room at one time. Wow. Let's see. The ministers who were willing to believe that she was a strumpet and a harlot were greeted with the sight of seeing one of their own in the throes of unprotected sexual activity with his male lover. The divorce was granted by the judge with no further deliberation necessary. However, her husband was never censored by his peers and was forgiven and given another church to pastor. One can only wonder how many of his fellow pastors were also living in the secret life of the down low. Man. Now, I will say this is kind of connected, or it's an example of this. They had a pastor, and it was not too long ago I saw it on a news feed, that they had a pastor that came out of jail for being a pedophile. He served his time, and he was preaching at a church. And they got rid of all the children in the church just so he could preach. So that just tells you our mindset of how we feel about our pastors. You know, he's a good pastor, so what I know we'll do, we'll get the kids out and we'll continue to let him preach. So this, actually, to be honest with you, this book right here lets us know exactly how things are really are. That's a perfect example of what he's saying about this book. It's, I mean, just about what pastors do. That is such a perfect example that they prefer to believe him over her and didn't want to, you know, you had some of them that didn't want to believe her and call her out of her name and say things until she showed them the video and it came out. He accused her when in reality it was him, you know. So, to his now former wife's credit, she had not become anti-gay because of this incident. She had accepted the idea that he might stray, but the hiding of his sexual preference with the probability of a greater risk of contracting HIV through unprotected sex was more that she was willing to suffer. The aftermath of this and other experiences of abuse and neglect led her to give up trying to have relationships. She hadn't dated for more than 10 years after her divorce and is very cautious when men approach her. The effects of betrayal lingers. So now you see how that affected her now, 10 years later, how she feels about men, how untrusting. I mean, she just don't trust them, you know, and she's very, you know, cautious about how she did. So we don't look at the long-term impact we have on our partners when we do crazy stuff like this. I'm saying that as far as relationships. But when you take it a little bit higher and it's a minister, you know, you're praising, you're in the pulpit talking, and you're saying and you're praying God, but yet and still you got all this little stuff going on the side, you know. It's not fair to the wife. And the wife is humiliated, and majority of the time she stays. A lot of times she stays. She doesn't go anywhere. And how would you feel in that position? I don't know. I don't know how I would feel. I don't know how I would take it. If my husband is the pastor of a church, and he's living in a church, I don't know if I could stay there. With me knowing how I am, I don't think I want to stay, because I'll be thinking about how it looks to me, how other people start to view me. Are you stupid? Are you literally looking at what he's doing? Why are you still there? You know, and I think about that. So I think I would definitely probably handle it a lot different than she did, you know. Okay. Whew. Now, the gay life in the church. All right, here we go. It says, another seminary I decided, at another seminary, I decided it was important to invite Christian members of the black gay community to my class so that my students could hear from black Christians that were gay. In attempting to discuss the role of homosexuality in the black community, I invited a black lesbian and a black gay man to give a presentation to the class concerning their experiences as members of black church in the community. These were particularly enlightened and interesting classes because I also experienced the depth of anti-gay sentiment in the black church community, not just among men, but among women as well. When the gay male gave his talk, he was greeted warmly by the black females who were concerned with the discrimination he suffered as a Christian in the churches he had attended. He related that he was not allowed to express his love for his male partners in the church, and when persons discovered he was gay, he was often harassed from the pulpit by the preacher, making the classic remarks, "God made Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve." On more than one occasion, he found himself being condemned to hell for his sexual orientation. The women were appalled by this treatment and stared and stated that only God had the right to determine who would go to heaven or hell. They were not intimidated by his sexuality and seemed to adopt a more motherly attitude toward his situation. That's weird, huh? Okay, now. It says, on the other hand, the men were cold to him. One even attempted to equate homosexuality with pedophilia. In fact, I had to warn this one particular minister to stop making statements in which he said that homosexuality was the same as child abuse. It turned out to be a classic instance of rejection due to the guilt and shame. For I later discovered that he had been incarcerated and was raped by other inmates. This experience led him to take defensive reaction in support of his quote-unquote manhood, which included a condemnation of homosexuals. His experience of sexual abuse had turned him against any expression of the same-sex love and led him to equate homosexuality with the most heinous sexual crime he could imagine. Now, because he was raped in prison, he automatically had the mindset that it was a form of child abuse or pedophilia, which in reality it didn't. And he wasn't homosexual, he was raped. So, I mean, that doesn't make you homosexual if you were raped. And because of him being raped, his ignorance set in and gave him this view or vision of how it is, his interpretation. After this experience, I was under the mistaken notion that black women were more accepting of homosexuality than their male peers. I thought that since they had experienced gender discrimination in the church, that they were more sensitive to the plight of the lesbian, gay, I don't know what that means, LGBTQ, I'm sorry, community in the church. However, when the black lesbians came to speak, I discovered I was wrong. In this case, the males were much more sympathetic to her situation, and the females showed an obvious coldness and disgust. It became apparent that they were opposed to her sexuality because they equated it with a woman trying to be a man, something they had been criticized for in their dealings with their churches and communities. So you see how mixed up we can be because of us not learning on our own and allowing others to teach us things that are not always correct. And helped form our opinion toward people because of what people say in the community and in the churches. They were sensitive to this critique and made every effort to be as feminine as possible in order to avoid this kind of sexual stereotyping that would impede their ability to serve in the church. Okay, let's see. I have met many black female religious leaders who have also felt the necessity to hide their sexual orientation in order to avoid church censor and disapproval. The women couldn't win for losing, whether they were gay or not, that they felt forced to act in the traditionally defined feminine ways in order to be accepted by their churches and male peers. This and other courses I have taught in this area has taught me how complex gender roles, sexual orientation, and sexual attitudes and behavior are among Black clergy and churches and communities. The lack of an in-depth study or studies in sexuality and sexual attitudes to a general ignorance or confusion in the Black community regarding these issues. Overall, we know that there's a lot of ignorance. That's just the word to use in our Black communities and our interpretations of how we see stuff. And he's so right, because I just told you how we felt. And then he explained to us the different gender, the different reactions to genders when it came to gay and lesbian. Which, I mean, all this stuff is true. Being in a Black, all-Black church, going to a church and actually looking at the reactions and looking at the things or listening to the things that the pastor is preaching about, a lot of stuff that I think that they should preach about, they don't. A lot of stuff he strays away from it, I don't know why, but they do. And it's never being told correctly or the way that it needs to be told when it comes to dealing with our basic social issues and everyday in our everyday lives. Instead of the theology of love informing their views on gender and sexuality, became apparent how the Black church and its community traditional adoption of gender roles and sexual attitude dictated their actions and attitude toward women and gay persons in their community and congregations. See, we don't want to be labeled, if we don't act feminine enough, we're gay. If we act too feminine, we're, you know, there's no happy medium is what I'm trying to say here. There's no happy medium. Issues regarding homosexuality were constant features of the experiences shared by these ministers and future pastors, but they had not developed an interpretation of human sexuality that was loving or ethically consistent. Like I said, there was no happy medium anywhere. Another of my female students related that when she was married, she was having some difficulties with her marriage. Her husband was a deacon in the church, and that she had a difficult time making the transition from being a lay person to becoming a minister because her husband was not supportive of her goals. According to her, he became jealous of her ambition, and they became more and more strong. She also suspected that he was not being faithful to her. She related that she and her husband decided to seek the counsel of their pastor. Whoa, here comes pastor. The pastor seemed concerned for their welfare and tried to convince her to stay with her husband. He assured her that she should trust her husband and that gradually their marriage would be healed. She accepted her pastor's counsel, but one day she discovered why the pastor was so solicitous of her husband's needs. She was suspicious regarding her husband's behavior, and then inadvertently came upon some information that led her to follow her husband. Upon doing so, she came upon her husband and her pastor locked in a passionate embrace. This revelation left her reeling. Not only did she discover that her husband was gay, but so was her pastor. She not only felt betrayed by her husband, but also felt betrayed and deceived by her pastor. She had felt that if she couldn't trust her husband, he could at least trust her pastor. The pastor was the leader of the city's leading Protestant churches. He had a wife and several children and was respected and admired by everyone in the community. Ironically, I knew the pastor's wife because at one time she was a girlfriend of one of my best friends. I had heard many earlier that the pastor was gay, but I had dismissed it as idle rumor because sometimes, you know, you don't have to listen to what everybody say. But obviously, boy, this came to be true. This discovery led this particular woman to leave her church and pursue ordination in another denomination. I cautioned her against developing an AA attitude out of her hurt and disappointment with her pastor. I thought it was important for her to distinguish her views regarding homosexuality as distinct from the emotional betrayal she felt. I counseled her that her husband's sexuality was not the problem. Instead, it was her husband's and his pastor's dishonesty, which was in part due to their fear of retribution generated by the church and the community, as their sexuality was openly known. But why would you want to step over those boundaries? That's a caution thing right there. I don't think I would want to step over those boundaries. Okay, what we're going to do is we have 3 minutes and 41 seconds left. I'm going to quickly read this, and then we're going to stop, and we're going to come back. She was unable to take my advice and became a vocal and harsh critic of homosexuality. Obviously, she was upset. She separated from her husband, and despite her qualifications and personal charisma, she found it difficult to gain employment and expresses frustration in class. By the time I had become familiar that some of the important actors in her profession were black and gay, I related to her that she was complaining about her gay husband and pastors to people who already were secretly gay, and if she was going to continue to work in her chosen field, she would have to deal with her pain in another way. She was being viewed as someone who was scapegoating a community that was not responsible for it and need to closet itself against negative attitudes of a black church and community. So, but basically what she was doing was she was taking her anger out after he told her, I don't advise you to go in that area of being anti-gay, but her attitude was the one where she was not understanding why she wasn't getting the attention or she wasn't getting the jobs or wasn't getting what she needed out of this, simply because of who she was talking to. She was preaching to the choir to a certain extent. All the people that she was voicing her opinion about being gay and homosexual was actually gay and homosexual people. So she had to change how she saw things in order for her to succeed in what she wanted to do, even though she felt the need to want to get out of the profession or in the direction of where she was going. So, you guys, we're down to 2 minutes and 1 second. I want to say thank you for listening in to Through the Eyes of the Black Woman. I am going to attempt to come back tomorrow. Hopefully I'm feeling much better. I won't be getting up and interrupting you guys or leaving you blank hanging on while I go do stuff. But I want to make sure we continue to talk about this book. I think it's a great book. I can't wait to get through this. I'm not gonna sit here and say I'm gonna do the whole book, but I really, really want to get through a lot of stuff that we can talk about because it's really not that. It's really not a long book, but I definitely want us to get through to the point where we understand some of the things and understand why there's sex power in the black church. So I want to say thank you very much for listening in to Through the Eyes of the Black Woman from the Say Your Peace Radio Network. You guys have a great night. May God bless you. Keep your head up. And we'll see you guys back here tomorrow night. I want to say good night and thank you again.
This has been another episode of Through the Eyes of the Black Woman with your host, Salida. We want to thank you for listening in and stay tuned.